Brave New World.
Hello and welcome to Brave New World programme. My name is John Harrison. Individuals need to blame somebody else when things go wrong. Families always compare themselves to other families. Countries need to defend their identity by comparing or what's called othering themselves with other countries or blocks of countries. And tensions between the West and the East can be described in terms of othering. Where does othering process stop? And are we coming to an end of the tensions between the West and the East? To help some of these questions, I'm very happy to be able to welcome to the programme Professor Barnett from the University of Newcastle. Now, Professor Barnett, in your book, you discuss a certain process which you call othering, inverted commas, which, you know, you discuss as something that goes on between the West and the East and the East and the West. Could you please just tell us briefly what this concept is for those of us who don't know what othering is all about?
Well, it's not that complicated. Mm-hmm. What I'm talking about in the book in terms of the idea of the West and its others is the way that people in the West have defined themselves in terms of those who they have excluded or who they regard as beyond and outside of the category of the West.
Yeah.
And I also talk about how people outside of the West come to either identify with the West and to assimilate its values associated with it, or they come to reject it. And I talk about Occidentalism,
yeah,
sometimes defined as a kind of like hatred or loathing of the West. And clearly, if you look at a country, a sort of proto-state like Islamic State,
mm-hmm,
the kind of hostility to the West, which is sort of bordering on the psychopathic,
yeah,
is one of the defining characteristics. I mean, Islamic State would mean nothing without the West. They are completely hooked to, mm-hmm, this category and define themselves entirely in opposition to it, and of course, and therefore make themselves slaves to the concept of the West.
Yeah, I mean, is it possible to translate this concept? Well, reverse engineer this concept in a way back to so the level of the individual. You know, the individual needs to compare himself or herself with another individual so that he and she can function normally within a society,
yeah,
which has certain rules. With that, is it possible to say,
yeah,
that individuals then in small communities, you know, families and then cities and then countries and then groups of countries could sort of need this identity to for their own survival? Or is that taking things too far?
No, it's not. It's taking things too far if you go on from that,
yeah,
I think, useful psychological analysis to then say, and therefore we have to have this particular category. I mean, clearly people got on very well without the concept of the West in the West before, 120 years ago. They barely used it.
Yeah.
They don't need it. We don't need it now. And no doubt we will move on at one stage, maybe this century,
yeah,
to another category. But that won't stop us, as you're kind of implying, needing something in order to identify ourselves,
right,
in order to distinguish ourselves, in order to create categories and boundaries which give us a kind of existential meaning.
Right.
Yeah, I think that will always generate conflict.
Yeah, I mean,
right, and it also generate other things as well. It can be a creative thing, it can,
yeah,
be a bad thing, but it's going to go on.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, I've lived in both Russia and China, and I'm very aware,
right,
that living in both of those countries, not at the same time, my goodness, it'd be difficult to handle, but you know, one at a time. And the culture is strong. You know, I feel very much immersed in the culture that I'm in at the present time, and it seems like reality,
mm,
and the West does seem like a long way away. So it's definitely two,
mm,
ways. I mean, I've got a couple of questions leading on from that. The first one would be, perhaps we're going to carry on this East-West othering business, you know, hating each other until maybe we discover life on other planets, and then we can other them, you know.
Yeah, we can other them. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that would be a great sort of displacement of our own antipathy towards each other.
Yeah.
If we could take it out on some little green aliens.
Yeah.
Yes, I look forward to that too.
Yeah, then we'll all be together against them, you know. Okay, but perhaps,
right,
a little bit more serious question.
I feel sorry for them.
I feel sorry,
yeah,
for them.
Yeah, I hope they're not listening into this conversation.
No, go on, they probably are actually, but anyway. But perhaps a more serious question. is then cultural identity the causation, the driver for political identity? Because it seems to be that this is a very sort of potent, very important question. Because if the cultures are very different, then the political identities are also going to be different.
Mm. Yes, well, culture can often be used as a kind of euphemism for ethnicity.
Yeah.
And when ethnic identities become confused with political identities, then I think one does open out a whole set of problems. And there are countries, Malaysia is a good one, where every political party is also an ethnic political party. It's either an Indian,
really?
Chinese, or a Malay. Yeah. And I think we see some signs of that, for example, in Britain. In the southeast of England, you know, the Conservative Party is pretty much a white party.
Yeah.
The Labour Party has some white working class support still,
right.
But it's shrinking. And it has a huge black and minority ethnic vote.
Yeah.
So there is a kind of ethnicization of politics. And it is a problem because actually what happens is that politics therefore disappears, political debate disappears, and you just vote with your tribe. So that's one of the processes where culture and politics get confused that I think we should be very wary of. We need to hold on to politics as rational choices about, you know, the future, rather than it being hooked onto some deep sense of ethnic loyalty.
That's interesting. Let's take a break here.
Brave New World.
Welcome back to Brave New World program. I'm John Harrison. Today you're listening to Professor Alistair Burnett from Newcastle University, who's talking to us about the concept of the West being best. Professor Burnett, I'd like to ask you just also perhaps another alternative from waiting until we find green men to blame for everything. Is there perhaps in the growth of ideas such as transculturalism, I'm sure you know what I mean, but perhaps listeners don't, whereby we learn how to see ourselves in the other? Is there, do you think, chance to move forward in some of those ideas of moving away from the other being a fixed, rigid concept somewhere else to identifying at least part of ourselves in the other? Do you see what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah, sure. I mean, this is happening. It is happening, yes. I mean, there is, through globalization, through the movement of people, an inevitable side effect of that, that people come to empathize, they see themselves in the shoes of other people, they can understand where they're coming from rather than just rejecting them. However, this cosmopolitan aspiration has been with us for a long time, really since it's one of the kind of Renaissance ideals of the cosmopolitan man.
Yeah.
And it does work particularly for, I don't know, your educated middle class, your sort of people who are able to get on a plane. It tends to work for that group in society, and it doesn't tend to work for more place-bound, less economically privileged people who have, as it were, more to lose from the erosion of clear cultural identities or their sense of place and so on.
Mm.
So it is an attractive model. I think it is happening, but it's happening at a different pace for different types of people. And I'm very conscious that amongst my community of, you know, academics and professors, you know, we've always got a plane ticket. We're all very comfortable about jetting around the world.
Right.
And we like to see ourselves as culturally cosmopolitan and so on.
Yeah. Global citizens.
But, global citizens, yes. But it's also a bit of a statement of our, it can be a bit of a statement of our class identity as well.
Yeah.
And
a
kind of bit of cultural capital is involved in that as well. So I think we have to be careful about offering it as a kind of a universal panacea.
Yeah. Well, what you've been saying is absolutely amazingly interesting. We've just got time for one more question and answer, if you don't mind. I'm sitting here in Moscow. It's 2016, and there's all sorts of stuff going on. And in some parts of the world, people are thinking, well, you know, wouldn't be surprised there's another third world war going to break out or something. You know, it's getting to that level of tension in some areas. I'd just like to hear, please, your gut feeling. Have we sort of reached a peak of this West-East stuff, or is it? Are we actually? Have we? Yeah. Reached, are we kind of going to come down from it, and that things are going to get better from now on, or what? In your opinion?
Well, I think the tension between the so-called West and Russia is something that has to be, and it is, I think, increased. This is one optimistic sign. Yeah, I think it's increasingly being seen as something that should be contained. There is a bit of a distraction as compared to events in the Middle East, where you have sort of a genuinely genocidal groups at work.
Yeah.
So the idea of like agonizing about Russia and the West and the two sides of that being horrible to each other does seem rather petty. And I think people, and there are signs of this, people think, come on, let's just work together. The West and Russia do desperately need to form working alliances. And I would have thought that common sense is going to prevail rather than letting what are, in fact, quite minor issues between Russia and the West get in the way of much, much bigger global problems.
Could it be that now we're in a situation where we have more than one other? And if we have more than one other, then there's a possibility of us getting over this thing altogether. But as long as we have one clear other, like we live in a bipolar world, he's good and she's bad, or she's good and he's bad, whatever it is, you know. Sorry, that's not a very very good example. But on a political level, East and West, I mean, if we have another party involved, a third party, is there a chance of us maturing a bit, perhaps?
Yes. Well, perhaps this is where the aliens come in, perhaps.
Okay.
Just to bring them back.
Yeah.
Okay. But I do think there is definitely a possibility that the multipolar basis of world civilization will be recognized, and this will make things easier, not conflict-free, but easier in the decades to come. I hope so, anyway.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much indeed, Professor Alistair Bonnett, for sparing the time to talk to us today. And thank you, listeners, for being with us. I hope it was interesting as it was for me.